My dear brother, how you doing there, man?
I'm so pleased to hear your distinctive Oakland introduction.
No, brother, we love you, we respect you, we want you to be free. So many of us, I won't speak on behalf of so many of us, believe you didn't do it. Your voice is so very important. We know you believe in justice for everybody, from president to policeman, but we believe you are innocent, and we thank God that your voice is still alive and you're sounding so rich and deep, my brother.
Thank you, my brother. Thank you. I want to move, and I love all of you, and thank you for coming. I know it's a cold, somewhat snowy night. At least it is in Greene County, Pennsylvania. I thank you all for coming. Welcome. This is from the preface of Jailhouse Lawyers. I mean, come on. Seriously. What in the hell is a jailhouse lawyer? Depending on your station in life, the term is apt to evoke a variety of responses. Disbelief, laughter for some, perhaps confusion. Jailhouse lawyer? The term implies a dissonance, a kind of contradiction in terms. Yet, even if some shun the title, there are tens of thousands of men and women who actually are such a thing. And like most people, they're heir to all the winds of whim, good and bad, competent and incompetent, large-hearted and petty. Years ago, before I entered the House of Death, I interviewed a man in Philadelphia's Holmesburg prison who was quite opinionated on the subject. His name was Delbert Africa, a well-known member of the Revolutionary Move organization, who soon would face a de facto life sentence in Pennsylvania's dungeons for being among nine people who had the temerity to survive a deadly police assault on their home and headquarters on August 8, 1978. Delbert Africa was an eloquent interviewee who spoke with a distinctive country accent, his conversation peppered with passion, reason, and commitment. He spoke disparagingly of jailhouse lawyers, and when I asked him why he felt this way, he responded, "Them dudes get in there, read all them law books, and before you know it, they be crazy as hell." "What do you mean, crazy?" I asked. "Well, they may not be crazy when they get here, but after a while, after a few months of reading it, they go down to City Hall, and when they see that them folks down there in City Hall, in the system, don't really go by that so-called law, well, it plumb drives them crazy." "Yeah, man, but why drive them dudes crazy?" "Because they can't believe that the system don't follow their own laws." "But why?" I continued. "It drives their ass crazy because they can't handle the fact that the system just make and break laws as it see fit. How many treaties they done signed with the Indians? Ain't a one of them they done kept. Some of them broke before the ink was dry on them old treaties. Them the same folks who run this system today. If they couldn't keep a treaty with Indians when they first got here, what make you think they're going to keep they so-called law today, especially when it comes to me and you, man? Bruh, I get that. I understand that. But what's up with that crazy jailhouse lawyers? I don't get that. They go crazy because, Moo, they really believe in the system. And this system always betrays those that believe in it. That's what drives them out their minds, man. They can't handle that. It literally drives them out their minds. I see them around here, walking around here days, crazy as a bedbug. It took me a while, but I got him. When he told me those words, I was a free man, as free as a black man can be in America, and working as a reporter and producer for a Philadelphia public radio station. When Delbert Africa broke it down for me, I had no idea that years later, his words would take on such significance. From Death Row, this is Mumia Abu-Jamal.
Yeah, my dear brother, that's powerful, though, man.
This call is from the State Correctional Institution at Greene and is subject to monitoring and recording.
You still there, my brother?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, indeed, indeed. I tell you, though, brother, it's not just the powerful and poignant words, but it's also the style and the form, though, man. I hear a little Curtis Mayfield in your voice, you know what I mean? That rich, rich tradition that flows through you. And that connects to each and every one of us who are concerned about justice from below, which holds across the board, but begins with poor folk catching hell in the language of Malcolm X, though, man. And right. I salute your witness, because the thing is, if you are a free black man on death row.
Don't tell nobody.
No. We want you free on the outside, but you see, there's different kind of freedoms. You know what I mean? Because believe me, we've got a whole lot of folk out here who are still in prison in their minds and hearts souls.
That's absolutely true.
I'm reminded
of Harriet Tubman when she was commended for freeing those hundreds of black folks. She could have freed a whole lot more if they knew they were slaves.
That's exactly right. And she had to, she was only 4 feet and about 7 inches, and she had some 6'5 folk who got scared, and she had to put the gun and say, Mama gonna shoot you dead if you make some noise. Because you're gonna reveal all the rest of us involved. But that's the tradition out of which we come, my brother.
That is exactly
so. And it's got roots that's rooted in struggles against white supremacist slavery, which is a form of American terrorism. But those R-O-U-T-E-S routes that take us to every corner of the globe. That's why you represent a struggle for black freedom that's concerned about the freedom of everybody, but it looks at the world from
this
below.
From the State Correctional Institution at Green.
Well, brother, I certainly try, because, you know, even though we all come from, you know, different environments and different backgrounds, this is one world.
That's right. That's right. And
you know,
one human family.
The same air.
That's right. Absolutely, though, brother.
You know, we drink the same water. I mean, it used to be they have segregated water fountains, but they ain't got that no more.
That's right.
I would just say this, if I may. Just yesterday, I spoke with a brother who was a anti-death penalty activist, but a global one. And that is, he meets with people from around the world and goes to conferences with people from around the world. And he told me something that was really quite remarkable that I had never heard of or read of. He was at a conference in California. And a scholar from Turkey was there. And the guy was telling me, now, you know, when we hear Turkey, we think of course, remember the infamous movie Midnight Express? It showed a very repressive and brutal system in a prison system in Turkey. Well, the scholar explains to him that when a Turkish politician runs for office, what he promises to get elected is forgiveness and leniency and justice and fairness for people arrested and charged with offenses. And when he said that, kind of my mouth dropped. I said, damn, it's like that in Turkey? He said, yeah. When I thought about it, it made a lot of sense, only because we know that Turkey is a non-Arab but a Muslim country. Many Muslim countries really do follow bits of the Quran, where there are provisions in the Quran for forgiveness for all kinds of, you know, offenses against communities and people. The only question, of course, in such an instance is, will the family forgive? If the family forgives, then the state, you know, offers forgiveness as well. But to just imagine a politician running like that, it kind of blew my mind, because you can't think of something similar in the American context.
Wow,
I mean,
that's
it's the
true.
Exact polar opposite in the United States.
That's
but it true. Also shows us that what we think we know about another country is based on sometimes false projections over our media. You know, we would never have thought of Turkey as that kind of country, but of course it is.
That's very real. Brother, I want to thank you first for your wonderful piece on science fiction on Octavia Butler and Du Bois's short story in Left Turn, you know that wonderful piece?
Oh, I remember what you're talking about. I'm amazed that you read it.
Oh, Lord, no. I try to keep track of you now, my brother. Oh, indeed, indeed. And I know you wanted us to read Neil Ferguson's piece on Complexity and Collapse in Foreign Affairs, talking about empires that are in deep decline, culture in decay, greed running amok, poor people, working people oftentimes feeling so impotent, powerless, hopeless, helpless, so that they don't organize and don't mobilize. Did you want to give us your characterization of where we are right now in light of Ferguson's talk about empire?
I read that 2 days ago.
Yeah, so it's on your mind, right? It was on mine, too.
I was blown away by it because, I mean, of course, this is a scholar who can be deemed conservative. I mean, coming from Oxford and whatnot and, you know, of course, British.
Yes.
But when he looked at empires around the world, he found something very similar, a kind of a rise, a coasting, and then a decline.
That's right.
And, of course, there are different reasons and different eras. And I think, you know, most people understood that the empire was in decline, especially during the last administration, where things were so so raw and so crude, shall we say. We don't torture, you know, that kind of stuff. Of course, you know, in the former administration, we had Abu Ghraib and we had Guantanamo and those kinds of things. The truth of the matter is we still have those kinds of things. We have Abu Ghraibs in every state in the United States. We have Guantanamos in every state in the United States and in the federal system. And it's just that, you know, we talk about it in terms of an administration. We don't talk about it in terms of a system. And until we begin looking at the empire as being
60 seconds remaining,
a bipartisan reality that affects people no matter who's at the top, then we'll never be able to change this reality that we're living in, the fact that we're all in a kind of prison.
Mm. Oh, and of course, we're in a prison in space and time, and the question is, what kind of person we're going to be, and my brother? It's just amazing to me in terms of the quality of your spirit. Your voice is just so, it's humble, it's human, it's still firm, it's still fortified. It's just incredible.
30 seconds remaining.
Well, brother, I am, even despite this condition in this place, I feel surrounded by love, by people like you and many other people, by Joanna and Mark and all our other friends. Thank you all. I love you all, and love is the most powerful force in the universe.
Yes, it is, my brother. Oh, yes. We love you. We love you, brother. Love you, brother. We love you, brother.
I love you, too.
Love you, brother.
Thank you all.
These commentaries are recorded by Noel Hanrahan of Prison Radio.